It is time for Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast, episode number 191. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. It's been a month since Gnostic Media's last episode, and let me say it's been a nice break. And thanks to everyone who continued to support the show while we did research and took a break off the air. And today, Dr. Tom and Freeman Burt rejoined the Gnostic Media podcast to discuss how to do research, and our case study is cannabis. This episode is being released on Tuesday, February 25, 2014, and was recorded yesterday. Both Dr. Tom and Freeman Burt have been on the Gnostic Media podcast a number of times, and for more information on them, see the Slaves Anonymous section on the Gnostic Media podcast, or just go to slavesanonymous.com, and also check out Burt's website at onlyfreemen.com and Dr. Tom's website at boundaries-4-effective-ministry.org. And donations, and since I haven't been on for a month, this list is a little bit long, but I'm going to read them anyway. This episode is brought to you by William, Ron, Tino, Jeremy, Tom, Gene, Paul, Alan, Casey, Peter, Michael, Nicholas, Paul J., Lewis, Carlos, Ian, Lee, John, none at the moment, Robert, Randy, Aaron, Steve, M&A, Thomas, Jason, and John, Charlotte, Sam, Stephen, Oscar, Lewis, Joseph, Samuel, Brandon, Barry, Scott, Philip, Deb, McKinley, Alan number two, and Krister. And thank you to all of you so much for supporting the show, and especially when we didn't put anything out for a whole month. And of course, we do our best to provide just about everything here for free, but your donations and website purchases are what keep us going. And I ask that you sign up for a membership or make a donation, because we can't do it without you. And we also accept Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Feathercoin donations up on the website. And I think you can also donate Doggy or Dogecoins or whatever you want to call them. And please also check out the store page. You can get the Wheat Blows bumper stickers, bookmarks. We do have a brand new batch of bookmarks up on the website, and they have the new Gnostic Media logo, as well as the three categories of fallacies on the back, which are new additions. And let's see, books, the Gnostic Media Archives, the She Who Remembers Archives, a DVD, T-shirt, etc. The views expressed by the authors and guests of this unprogram are their own and are not necessarily those held by myself, the host, or Gnostic Media. Check out the website at www.gnosticmedia.com, GNOSTICmedia.com, or contact me through the web forum on the website or at contact@gnosticmedia.com. Thanks for listening, and thank you for your support. And here is my interview with Burt and Tom. How to do research, case study, cannabis. And let me just say, there's going to be more in this series, more coming up. So don't think this will only be about cannabis. And even if it's just cannabis, in this episode, the topics covered are still very important. Enjoy. All right, gentlemen, Burt, Tom, welcome back to the Gnostic Media Podcast. This is, what, episode number 191, I believe, something like that. And it's been a couple of months since we've had you two on. And so we, this time, and Burt and I had discussed a number of times about doing a show on research. So we're finally getting to a show on research here. So Burt, Tom, welcome back to the Gnostic Media podcast.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having us, sir.
Well, Burt, do you want to start off? You had just sent us a load of documents here, and you know, we might as well. Why don't you start off and break down exactly what you want to go into and what type of research this is? And you were just discussing about the amount of research that one needs to do before they defend themselves.
Yeah. So what we're going to attempt to do here is to give folks an idea of the basic research that you need to do, which is basically the type of research that your attorney will never do for you, okay? So one thing that you always have to keep in mind when you're in any kind of a legal battle is that, especially if it involves you, is that no one will know the case better than the effort that you are willing to put into your own case. So if you are ignorant about your own case, how will you ever know the degree of ignorance of the people around you, either defending you or prosecuting you or judging for that matter? So we're going to attempt to show what a basic, and this is actually a very serious accusation involving controlled substance. So if you want to open up the one paper that says the violation, this will begin with a typical type of accusation that you would get in a criminal case. And of course, this can be tied to a traffic stop. This can be tied to any criminal accusation because they all begin with the same source, which is a statute, a code, a municipal code, a federal code, something. So in this particular one, you know, we can see what it is. So if you want to read through it, and then we can pick out the little independent pieces within it that are all critical before you even begin to move forward.
All right. And so what are these documents that you sent us here, Bert?
Well, these are all some of the basic, and this is very basic research that you would begin to do so that you yourself would understand what you are up against.
Okay.
Because right. Most of these words are going to have specialized legal meanings that aren't what you think they are.
All right, yes, and we have covered some of the meanings of those words in some of the other shows with you, and people can find that on my website under the Slaves Anonymous section, as well as on Clint Richardson's website. You've been doing a show with him every Thursday since about November or so, correct?
Something like that, yeah.
All right, so where do we go next here?
Well, this one paper that I sent you called The Violation. So this would be like the accusation that they would give you. This is what they're saying that you violate. Okay, and this is actually from a real case.
All right, so it says violation 841, 846, and 856 for conspiracy to possess 1,000 plants or more.
Yeah, but the very
go ahead.
The very beginning title of it, it says violation of the what? Controlled Substance Act. Okay. So they're saying you violated that act, which is a congressional act. And we'll go back to that word.
Sure. And you and I have covered also, and you wrote a paper on this, that the feds actually don't have jurisdiction beyond 10 miles from Washington, D.C. So then what are they doing telling people that they can't possess plants outside of that jurisdiction?
Well, and that's where it gets confusing. You want to talk about that, Tom?
Well, yeah, I'd just make a slight correction there, Jan, because you said that they don't have jurisdiction 10 miles from the District of Columbia. They have 10 square miles of jurisdiction.
Yes, you're right. I stand corrected. Thank you.
Okay. So, and that becomes important for a couple of reasons. The there used to be, before the year 2000, there was in the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, at Rule 54C, it said all apply in the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Period. End of discussion. And so when people got onto that, some of the patriots in the patriot movement got onto that, they removed that and they sort of covered it up in rule number one, but there's no clear statement like there was when it was in rule 54C. So they were stating the jurisdiction of federal acts that they apply in the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And then a further question that we're looking into is, exactly where is the District of Columbia? It says that the United States is in the District of Columbia in federal law. That's where the United States is geographically. But if you look at a map of the District of Columbia, you'll only see sort of a rectangle on the north side of the Potomac River, and that's in Maryland. Maryland ceded that land to the federal government. And it used to be a complete 10-mile square that included Virginia on the other side of the Potomac. Now, Virginia took the land back. Congress wanted to give that land back to Virginia, and the question was why. And so the hypothesis is, so they could put federal land, they could put District of Columbia land throughout the states. So federal courthouses may very well be the District of Columbia land, if that land belongs to the federal government. And so that becomes an important question, where these laws apply. And if you step into a federal court, you may be walking into the District of Columbia, even if you're in Kentucky or Utah.
Yeah, and the part to tie to this is the one section of the Constitution that says that they have exclusive jurisdiction, okay?
Mm-hmm. Over that
land, they have exclusive jurisdiction over 10 miles square, which is 100 square miles. And then they have shared jurisdiction with the states. Mm-hmm. That's a different thing, okay? Mm-hmm. And the shared jurisdiction with the states, of course, ties in with whatever status it is that you happen to share or be, and it's shared with the states and the federal government. So what type of status could possibly be shared between those two different supposedly entities that allows them to exercise, you know, sovereign authority over that entity? And the entity that all this research is pointing at is the person of or belonging to the United States.
Mm-hmm. And so the point that I was making was if you added up all the little chunks of federal land around the United States, the forts, the magazines, the courthouses, and the post offices, then you probably are going to find that it adds up to 10 miles square. And that's the piece that was taken back, hypothetically now, that would be the piece that was taken back from Virginia and then spread, fragmented across the country.
Yeah, which is, I think it's 33% of it. I think what's there now is 67% of it.
67%.
Yeah, 33% of it is missing. So it appears that 33% is scattered all over the U.S. in order to allow for those places. And that's another term that we're going to run looking through this thing.
So I get what you're saying then. Basically, they had to give the section that Virginia had ceded to them, they had to give it back and then break it up into small segments and spread it all over the country. Otherwise, they would have zero jurisdiction.
Yeah, and they would have exceeded the 10-mile square limitation.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the problem.
So we think that they're operating within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States as defined.
So, that's a lot of hair splitting to come up with that scheme to be able to pull that off, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no explanation why they would take their 10 square miles in Virginia and Maryland and then break nearly half of it up and put it elsewhere.
Yeah, and actually, I one of these days when I have, you know, lots of free time, I'm gonna put this thing together because I'm finding a bunch of court cases that make direct reference to the exclusive jurisdiction of the United States. And there's a big difference in, you know, we won't be able to clarify this completely, but there is a big difference between exclusive jurisdiction and shared jurisdiction with the states.
Right.
And actually that shared jurisdiction actually goes beyond the supposedly 50 states united, because it includes the whole world, which we're gonna show here today also.
So as a research matter, the first thing you need to know is, do federal laws apply outside of the District of Columbia? And where is the District of Columbia?
Yeah, where is the territory that the particular statute applies in? And what most people always, 99% of the people confuse, is a confused territory with land. they're not the same thing. They have actually they're related, but they're not the same thing. A territory can be like Walmart has a sales territory in California. That doesn't mean that when you're in California, you're always in Walmart. So you can only be in Walmart when you're in California, acting like a Walmart employee or a Walmart customer or a Walmart whatever. You have to have a status within Walmart in order to be in that territory. And the same thing applies to the United States, and actually the same thing applies to California. You can be of California and be on that land and be within that territory. But what if you're not of California and you're still on that land? Are you within the territory of California?
You have to be in the jurisdiction of the entity to be in their territory. So a salesman who's traveling in Walmart territory, the states that would comprise, say, the Western Territory for Walmart, he's still in Walmart's jurisdiction because he's in their territory. He would be subject to the regional manager, Walmart's regional manager, or whatever they call it, whether he's in Nebraska or whether he's in Arizona or whatever. If he's in the Western Territory, then he's still subject to Walmart, even though he's not in the Walmart store.
Yeah, and here's one way to really visualize it from a very personal point of view. Let's say somebody from the government comes over to your house, and let's say you live on a 1 acre piece of land, and he says, I need to go over there on that corner of your lot because I have a city business to deal with. And you say, no, I'm not letting you trespass on my land. And he's going to say, I'm not here trespassing on your land. I'm here under the permission granted to me via the address that you have registered with the city. And due to the fact that it's registered with the city, it's within the jurisdiction that allows me to check that little corner of the lot over there, because if I don't check it, that little corner will put in danger the rest of the community around you. And therefore, I don't even need your permission to go to that corner. And he'll just go right there to that corner, do what he has to do, and leave. And he's in fact not trespassing, because you gave him permission to operate on your land via the fact that you register your land on his territory. And that's something that really confuses people when government people show up on their land. Does that make sense?
Sure. So how do you not register then, to not give them permission? Or do you just post it, no trespassing? Or how do these things work? Because this is much different than what we talked about these things maybe 6 months ago. So let's explain the differences and the new discoveries.
Well, when you register your home or your land or whatever with the county, that's usually how it works. In the East, they have townships. So you register either with your county or with a township. And the essence of registering your property, what you're doing is you're taking your land out of the real domain, okay, which is real soil, real dirt, where worms and germs and things live. And you're taking it and putting it in a fictional world, which is this territory of the whatever subdivision it happens to be, you know, either city, township, or county, or state, or whatever. You're moving it into this other fictional world for the sole benefit of allowing you later on to convey that title of that now property, because the land now is being converted from being real land into being converted into recognizable property, which is property that can be conveyed in the commercial world, okay? And that is, in fact, what you're paying for with taxes and all these other things that they charge you. And once it's in within that world of the commerce, well, now you're trading. Every time you're involved with these people, you're trading. You're exchanging a benefit for a duty. And then the duty that you give back to them for their service, of course, is the fees that you pay and your obedience to their regulations. That's why you cannot stop them from coming across your land.
Even if they don't have a warrant, you're saying?
Right, because if they're on that land operating within the capacity of that registration that you gave them, then they're operating within the law that
so
you agreed to abide
any,
by.
Any land, any anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's
okay,
a contract.
So then, so you're saying that we have zero rights, that that they can come and occupy our land at any given moment, at any time, just for whatever. They can come into our house, anything else. No warrant, no nothing.
Yeah, they do it all the time. They do it left and right.
Yeah. I mean, SWAT teams, nothing happens to a SWAT team when it goes to a wrong address and kills the family and the dog. You know, there's nothing, there's no penalty. There's no penalty for that.
Yeah, and sure. See, here's another fact. If you, if I sell a piece of land to you, and then I notify the county that I no longer own it because it has been sold, okay, and I even provide evidence of the fact that I sold it to you, so I'm telling, I'm not paying taxes on this thing anymore. It doesn't belong to me anymore. Okay, so they'll take me off the tax register, and then they have to wait for you to register the property. If you don't register the property with them, the property is now basically in limbo. And the IRS cannot even see it until it's registered.
So the point is just to not register your property, your cars, your property, your houses in the first place.
Yeah, every time you register your property, well, of course, the same thing goes to your children. When you register them and get them a birth certificate, you register them in the system. And then you're
right.
Exchanging something for a service that they're giving you.
That's a contract.
Yeah.
Right.
So you contract with them. Most people don't understand that when they fill out an application, they think, I don't know what they think. I don't think they do think. But an application form that the government prints and they submit it to you. It's just the reverse. They submit that application to you for you to put your power of attorney on there by your signature for them to regulate you.
Mm-hmm.
So the state doesn't give you a marriage license. You give the state the marriage license to do something that it would be illegal for them to do, which would be to interfere in your contract with the other
mm-hmm.
person.
Right.
Yeah. And here's the point that everybody overlooks, because everybody is under this illusion because they keep, you know, watching TV, and that's where most people get their education. They believe that the people are sovereign, or at least that's what they say, right? That the people in America, they're the ones that vote in the representatives, and then the representatives do what they want them to do. So therefore, the people are the boss. Well, that may be true, but it might not be true in actual exercise of your capacities. Because if you act as a sovereign here on your left hand, but then you act as a servant with your right, and they only get to see you when you're acting with your right, well, then you're a servant. And that's how most people operate within this so-called United States. They operate as a servant.
They operate that way all over the world. The Queen of England is a good example, and I use her sometimes because everybody knows who she is. She's the sovereign of England, right? But she's actually a citizen of the EU because she had to apply to Brussels to get farm subsidies for her estates in England. She's entitled as a citizen of the EU to have her farms subsidized by the EU government.
I thought England wasn't a part of the EU.
Their currency is they're not in the Eurozone. But she's a citizen of the EU. She gets a subsidy from the EU.
Interesting.
Yeah, those big estates that she travels around on are farms that are subsidized by the EU. So she's just a citizen. So she's acting in two capacities. I think that's what Bert's referring to. People don't know what she knows what she's doing when she acts in those capacities, but most of us don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we say we're sovereign, but we want Social Security benefits, or we think it's a very romantic thing to get a marriage license until we wind up in family court, which we contracted to do by getting a marriage license. So people don't think about their status.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you have I mean, a perfect example of this would be like if you leave a chunk of wealth to your children, okay? But your children are like 2 and 3 years old. So you get someone to manage this trust for your children. And then they give to your children as they need until they get to be 18 years old or 21 years old, and they can manage then their own affairs, and then they take over the trust. So then the guy who's managing the trust gives them control of the trust. But what happens in this United States is we never grow up. Right. We continue to be 2 and 3 years old until the day we die, and they're constantly managing our life. And that's why people end up in criminal courts, which is what we're going to get into here. So the point is, before you even begin to address any of this stuff dealing with the so-called government, you really should have some kind of an idea of who you are, where you are, and why you're even there. You know? I mean, if you don't have any clue, then they're going to define everything for you. And if you don't know who you are, if you don't know where you are, if you don't know why you're there, then how can you even begin to ask any meaningful question to cause them to define what they're doing when they're coming after you?
Always back to the who, what, where, and when, huh?
Sure seems to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, without having those very basic principles of how to think, I mean, just nothing's going to move. You know, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah. And then we're just left to assumptions that they control our lives and we have to just bow our heads and go along as good little slaves.
But most people want to do that. You know, there's only very few people who don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Well, they're conditioned that way repeatedly every day. I pledge allegiance to the flag and all of this stuff, and it's beat into them throughout their lives, and they're taught not to question otherwise, and that's the real issue.
Yeah. I had a journalist on the, he and his wife were White House correspondents, so they sit in the White House all day. And I said, why don't you raise meaningful questions about FEMA camps and things like that? And they said, what about FEMA camps? They didn't know about FEMA camps. And I said, you're journalists. How, you know, what, you know, they said, well, if we raise questions like that, we won't have access. I said, well, what's the point of access if you can't ask questions, you know? Mm-hmm. But anyway, the guy said to me, we got into the Social Security thing, and he said, I don't care what the Constitution says. He says, I love my Social Security check. So people, even if you can point out how they're enslaved to it, they say, yeah, but I love what I'm getting
mm-hmm.
from it.
Yeah, and the bottom line is the United States is headed, I mean, at 80 miles per hour down the highway to exactly what Russia was prior to what Russia became after their recent turnover.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and we have to remind people that the Bolsheviks killed 60 million people in Russia when they took over. So, ladies and gentlemen, you need to stop chasing after that socialist check and grow up and start acting for yourself.
Yeah. As long as people continue to be infants, well, they're going to be treated as infants, you know. And I think we touched on that word before, that in some statutes, infant, minor, and adult mean exactly the same thing.
All right, so what's the next step, Tom?
What I was saying was that if you're a business person, you have an MBA from Harvard and you want to do business in France, you have to learn the business vocabulary of France. You may not be able to carry on a conversation in French about art, but you must learn the vocabulary for your business contacts and use the business vocabulary. So people are contracting all the time with government corporations and they never learn the vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
So a person is, in federal corporate language, is really a piece of paper with bylaws written on it. That's what a person is. It's a corporation or a trust.
And Bert and I have done shows with Clint Richardson regarding word definitions and just going through and actually looking up each word and nearly always they mean something entirely different than we assume.
Oh, yeah.
That is regular, you know, common daily usage.
Yeah, it's totally different. That's why you have to have a legal dictionary, because it has those words don't mean what we've been taught that they mean.
Yeah, and here's even the bigger danger of that. Even the dictionary might not even be good enough, because that word may have been expanded to mean additional things based on some stupid case somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they just expanded the meaning of it. You know, at one point it only meant mice. Well, now it means dogs and cats.
Right.
And you have no idea until you read that case.
Mm-hmm.
That's why entering into contracts with the federal government is about the most dangerous thing, or even local government, the most dangerous thing that you can possibly do.
Because you don't know the vocabulary.
You don't know what the hell it's saying. Why would you sign, affirm, agree to subscribe to some contract that you don't understand, that was written in Martian language? But yet people do it every day.
Yeah. And they don't read what they're signing. Like when you go for a marriage license, there's a custom now that if you're single and you get a wedding invitation, it'll say your name and guest. And when you sign a marriage license application, you put down a social security number. So the state that you're asking for to license with is bringing an uninvited guest called the federal government to your marriage. So by putting down that social security number on the marriage license, you've agreed to be subject to all federal laws. I'm getting feedback here. I'm listening to myself, which I often like to do.
I just heard it too there, but now it seems to have gone away.
I don't mind listening to myself, actually. Come on, that was, Jan, you can laugh. You're the host. You're supposed to encourage lightness and humor. These are heavy issues.
Well, I was laughing. It just, you know, was to myself.
do you do that a lot?
it seems to happen right now, especially with you.
Okay. But
I'm hearing feedback now. I'm going to try and mute mine, but there does seem to be some network issues with Skype today, so we'll just have to work it out there, but I'll mute mine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made my point, I think. Bert, you can take over then.
Yeah, so the thing that I think I was very passionately saying when we went mute had to do with the same thing that we just covered about entering into contracts and not signing, putting your subscription on anything that you don't understand. But anyway, if the point is that before even beginning to analyze the accusation that they are trying to put on you, be that a statute, a city code, a federal code, you really need to comprehend who you are, where you're standing, because then you will be able to question what they are doing and enter relevant questions as far as the accusation or the definitions that they're trying to impose on you.
Yeah. So when a judge says, do you understand the charges or whatever, the most honest answer would be no, because you don't know what those words mean.
Mm-hmm.
That there's legal definition and you need time to research what the words and the accusation mean. You have to know what's coming down the pike so you can defend against it. So a substance is something that's derived.
Yeah.
A plant isn't derived.
So yeah, right. and basically going back to that first document we were reading regarding Washington D.C. So they're saying that if you have 1,000 plants or more in Washington D.C., it's illegal. I mean, what if you have 1,000 blades of grass in your front yard or something?
Well, there you go.
Well, and that's what we're going to get into, is that all these things that they are that they're calling, whatever they're calling, is not what it is. So first of all, this the very title of this violation, or the source of the violation, says violation of the Controlled Substance Act. So the very title is telling you that they're talking about what? Controlled substance. So if whatever they're saying that you have is not a controlled substance, then this act doesn't apply. And this is the type of things that attorneys will simply come straight up and tell you, oh, yeah, well, you might be right, but, you know, the judge is not going to want to hear any of that kind of stuff.
Now, when the government decides they want to start, you know, banning plants, where does the limit, where does this stop? I mean, are they, could they ban carrots or potatoes and lettuce and, you know, cauliflower? Where does it end when they decide that they have the right to ban a natural plant?
There is no end. They can say that some element, some trace mineral that is found in carrots, if combined with this other synthesis process, then causes carrot to now be considered to be a drug, and therefore it's illegal for you to grow it without a license.
But it doesn't have to be a drug. It just has to be a substance.
Yeah, it just has to be a substance.
You could say one of the big things that's being kicked around now is this genetically modified food. And the government could say that broccoli, you have to purchase a certain amount of broccoli, and you can't have more than 1,000 broccoli plants on your property because it's a GMO substance. It's a derived substance. We've modified it. It's not broccoli the way you grew up with it. You know, you had to eat your broccoli
sure,
when you were
and
a
well,
kid.
And that's, well, that's, but that is one of the huge issues with companies like Monsanto. Monsanto has pretty much been kicked out of Europe, and now we need to kick them out of every other continent on Earth. You know, maybe they can try their crops on the ice caps of Antarctica or something.
Right. But that would be a way to address your question. Could they control broccoli and carrots? Yeah, they could, because they could say that those are derived. They're not natural plants.
Okay, so what if you had heirloom seeds or et cetera that you're growing from, and it has nothing to do with their GMO crap?
What about tobacco? Suppose you have a tobacco grower next to you, and you buy tobacco, and you dry it and process it and roll your own. But if a company buys it and puts nicotine in it, now you've got a difference. You've got a substance here.
Well, I mean, well, tobacco leaf does have nicotine in it, but you know, and you can actually go and buy tobacco. Oh boy, that feedback! You can go and buy whole leaf tobacco directly from the farmers and distributors, and cut the.
But the question is it a controlled substance?
Well, you know, interestingly, the feds don't even get to tax it unless it's processed first. If you buy it as whole leaf, they can't even touch it.
They can only control what they create.
Right.
So if it's processed, then they can control it.
Yeah, but here's the key. Here's the key to understanding this whole thing about a controlled substance. People think that it's possible, like you just said, that nicotine is found in tobacco. Okay, nicotine in its natural form is found in tobacco. The synthesized version of nicotine is not found in natural tobacco. The synthesized version of nicotine is what they add to cigarettes.
Right. Big difference.
Big difference. And that's the same thing with any drug. Cocaine in its natural form, it's not a substance, but the synthesized version of cocaine is.
Well, same thing with just drugs that people take. Yeah, Digitalis is from a garden plant.
And it's funny, too. I mean, you know, speaking of cocaine, you can't get on a bus or an airplane in South America without being served coca tea or...
That's right.
Or something like that, you know. But, you know, here, it's illegal everywhere. So it would be like banning coffee or something up here, right?
Yeah, yeah. But it's true of prescription drugs because they're synthetic. They can control them. So digitalis is a synthetic mock-up of a beautiful garden flower from a beautiful garden flower, the fox flower.
Boy, I don't know what's going on with the network today, but it keeps backing up and going over itself there.
So there's a difference. Bert, I think probably you can't emphasize that point enough, that things that sound like controlled substances, like naturally occurring caffeine or naturally occurring nicotine, are not the same things as synthetic laboratory mock-ups of those chemicals.
Yeah, it's like nicotine. Nicotine actually has a trade name. It's Nicorette, Nicotrol.
Yeah.
So that's not the same thing that grows inside the plant naturally.
And God never said, let there be Nicorette.
Yeah.
No.
You know, so it's all a synthesized version of the natural occurring thing, whatever it happens to be.
So
that is what they control.
So going back to this original thing that we started, the revelation for conspiracy to possess 1,000 plants or more. And so, you know, so how are they saying that just possessing this plant that is not manufactured?
Okay.
How do they get it to be manufactured from that point?
Well, first of all, let's begin with the very beginning of it. So they have three statues there, okay? And the three statues are actually connected together. They say section 841, 846, and 856. So you have to violate all those simultaneously in order to be able to be convicted. Okay, and they do that a lot in some of these accusations, and the attorneys overlook that very often, you know. But they have to prove all those violations in order to convict you, period. Okay, so the word "and" is very important when you're reading violations, because it is adding an additional qualification to the accusation. So he says, you know, in order for us to convict you, you would have to walk from point A, point B, and to point C. So if you only walk from point A to point B, you cannot be found guilty. Okay, so all that is important. Then it says, for conspiracy. So conspiracy is an element. They have to show that you were conspiring to do something. Okay, then it says possess.
So now let me back you up on that word conspiracy, because, you know, conspiracy requires one or more people. You know, it's funny, too, that the government goes around touting this conspiracy theory, too, when the word conspiracy is in their own stuff and tried daily. But for instance, a friend of mine who was tried for a major case for growing medical marijuana here in California. He's been in prison for a number of years. I had him on the show several years ago, Eddie Lepp. Now, he had actually sent a letter to Governor Schwarzenegger before he planted the crop. Now, if he had sent a letter to the governor of the state of California, then it couldn't be secret, and nor could it be a conspiracy now, could it?
Right. But there could be a conspiracy actually on the other side to go after him.
Right. Well, of course there is.
But
I mean, we know that.
But I'm sure his attorney never brought that up. You know?
Right.
But
well, and there was a conspiracy, and we do know for a fact that the sheriff was corrupt up there and allowed the feds to come in, and then the sheriff worked with the feds instead of doing his job, and then they were going to run for sheriff and have that sheriff thrown out.
Mm-hmm. Well, so anyway, the element of conspiracy is an element, and it's not conspiracy always the way that people would generally think, because each statute is going to have some kind of a version of what the conspiracy means. And here, in something involving drugs, it's conspiracy. It means that you and someone else is getting together and you're agreeing that you're going to move this imitation of the controlled substance into the marketplace. That's really what it means. And if you don't have, you know, that other person there with you to do that, then there is no conspiracy.
So a simple decision to do that would not be a conspiracy.
Right. Okay. Because
so you know, so what they do then is they get, you know, people. I suppose they entrap people in a to admit that they committed a conspiracy when they actually had acted alone all the time.
Well, and the feds and the state do it all the time. They will plant a secret agent, right, to come and induce you into selling them the thing.
Sure.
And then once you sell it to them, they say, oh, well, now you were involved in conspiracy. But wait a minute. Don't you work for the police?
And you were conspiring to buy it in the first place.
Yeah, how does that make me into a crime? And in reality, when you trace the meaning of all those things that they do as far as planting an insider to coerce, to entice you to commit a crime, that's wrong. That's illegal. But they allow it.
It's called entrapment, yeah.
It's called entrapment.
So, you know, so they don't have to show that you would have committed the crime otherwise. They just have to get you to commit the crime under their influence.
Yeah. Well, it's like cops who like to dress up as women prostitutes and go out on the street and arrest guys for propositioning them.
Yeah. So if that cop had not dressed up like a prostitute, would a crime have been committed? You know? No, it wouldn't have.
Yeah, no.
So they're creating the crime, and then they're prosecuting you for it.
Well,
that's insane.
And then not only that, after they conspired to create the crime, then they act as witness of the crime.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. And prosecutor of the crime.
Yeah. So the whole thing.
So they create the crime, then they blame the criminal, prosecute. I mean, talk about conflict of interest. Wow.
Yeah, but that's typical what they do. And the attorneys don't challenge any of these things from the perspective of entrapment. I mean, some people have gotten off from that when they approach it from that angle.
Yeah, because conspiracy would require a meeting of minds. Entrapment doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but, well, I mean, if the police chief and the sergeant and several officers got together, that would be conspiracy of minds, would it not?
Yeah. But I mean, you know, a criminal conspiracy, but, you know, if you wanted to do something illegal, like sell, you know, some manufactured mind-altering drug to children or something like that, and you and some other person got together, you would have a meeting of minds about how to do that, how to go about that. Whereas if you were entrapped into doing it in some way, somebody planted something on you, a candy bar, and you gave it to a kid who ate it, that's entrapment, and it's not a conspiracy. You have to have a meeting of minds in conspiracy. That's a contract.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be based on something real, not something fake.
Yeah.
You know, there are cases involving that where someone actually thought that they were selling a quote-unquote drug, and then it turned out that the drug wasn't a drug. So then they couldn't convict him, but they were still trying to convict him. And said, well, but he thought it was a drug. So, you know, in his mind, he thought it was real. And it turns out it wasn't real.
Yeah.
So it gets very complicated. But the point here is that you have to challenge every little piece of the whole thing. So in this next thing, it says 1,000 plants. Well, what does plant mean? A plant could mean a factory.
Could mean something that was planted on you.
I mean, it has all kinds of meanings.
Okay. So then we have this entire equivocation with the word plant that...
Exactly.
Well, I don't own any plants.
Yeah, most people would assume they know
what that means. You guys planted 1,000 plants on me? What does this mean exactly?
Right. Yeah, so but here's how it gets more ridiculous, because they're saying that you had 1,000 plants, which in reality what that means, you had 1,000 little factories, okay, that were manufacturing marijuana, whatever that happens to be. That's how ridiculous it is.
So the language is really, really vague.
So plant is being synonymous with, being made synonymous with factory.
Yes.
And so a little plant that grows naturally marijuana in nature is then a factory plant for marijuana production.
Well, they want you to think that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, which is impossible. How can a real God-created plant be a factory that synthesizes its own fruit?
Well, the point is that people would overlook the word conspiracy.
Well, you're missing the little green elves that live inside the leaf.
Yeah.
But you can't overlook any word. Then it goes on to use conjunctions like or.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and most people don't think those are important, but they are. Remember when Clinton came out with that famous statement, like, it depends on what the word is
means? Is.
Well, right. To the ordinary person, is the present tense of to be. That's it. Something's going on in the present. But if you look in the legal dictionary for in and of and or and is, you get these long dissertations on what these words mean legally.
Yeah, I mean, like, my favorite word is the word of, O-F. It's got one heck of a long definition.
It does. So you can't take even those words, can't be taken for granted.
Yeah, so then you keep going through this. I mean, this is just one little tiny short sentence. And look at all the time we're spending just talking about it. Then it says 1,000 plants or more of, you know, that of means belonging.
Marijuana.
Belonging to marijuana.
And that,
so what's marijuana?
Right, which is another, and then that's another made up name. That
yeah,
we know
that's a slang. That's a slang word. Yeah,
sure. And because obviously cannabis hemp was legal and even required to go grow if you were a farmer up through World
right.
War II.
Well, but here's the point, is that right here in this accusation, they're using the word marijuana, but you don't see the word cannabis anywhere in there.
Right.
Sure.
You know, and when you look at the definition of marijuana, they say parts of, you know, the cannabis sativa L plant.
Oh,
well,
right.
Parts of... And then it says combined with compounds will right. end up with a controlled substance.
Yeah. So the word plants cannot refer to an integral plant because the statutes are talking about parts of a plant that are combined with something artificial.
So what you're saying is that the whole plant can't be considered marijuana when it's actually cannabis hemp.
No, and actually that's what I did in that paper that I put together. When you go through and try to just define what marijuana is, it's not defined. It doesn't tell you what it is. You cannot put your finger and say, okay, this is marijuana. Oh, no, wait a minute. That other element is missing. Oh, this is marijuana. No, it's not. It's not quite this. You cannot figure out what it is. But one thing for sure, marijuana is not cannabis sativa. It's not the cannabis plant as we know it.
And they never said it was.
And they never said it was.
Yeah. So,
but we assume that it is.
They hope that you presume that you'll give your meaning, your common meaning to mm-hmm. all of these words.
Yeah, and then if you keep going down, it says with intent to distribute. Now, I didn't highlight distribute there, but I wanted to see how easy it is to overlook. What does that mean? Most people would think, oh, it means to just simply pass it out, you know, to give you some, give the other guy some, and the other girl over there some. That's not what it means at all. It has a specific meaning. To distribute is to be in the commercial world selling it for a specific purpose. So you cannot assume what it means. You have to find out what it
is. And so now, unless you have a business license and you're registered, then you're not in the commercial world, are you?
Right. That's right.
Right.
That's right. So if you were going to properly distribute,
so if you're gonna grow and sell your own farm goods and potatoes and cannabis flowers, then you're just doing barter and
that's
trade.
Right.
You're not in commerce.
That's right. Right.
That's
you're
right.
not intending to distribute it because in order to distribute it, you have to distribute it to through a particular venue, and everything that is involved with the Controlled Substance Act is basically related to drugs. And drugs that are designed for a specific purpose. So if you're not in that purpose of distributing it, you're not distributing it.
According to their definition.
According to their definitions. You know? Then he goes on, and for manufacture. manufacture is to create, to synthesize something.
Bert, you just skipped over the and.
Yeah, there's the and. So it has to have that possibility connected to it.
It has to have what follows connected to all what went before.
Distribute and manufacture.
Yeah.
And so then what they're getting you on, okay, so the plant grew it, but if you cut the flower off the plant or if it fell off, then you manufactured this bud.
Well, that's what they want you to believe, but the word manufacture means to synthesize.
In legal land.
Yeah, that's really what it means.
And so if you cut a flower off of a plant, you haven't synthesized it. You haven't put it under the scope and created sativex, for instance.
Gardeners pluck buds off their plants all the time to make the remaining bud grow bigger, a bigger flower. They're not manufacturing anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And see, here's the reason why they can regulate controlled substances. Because controlled substances have what? They have patents.
Right. Got it.
They grant the patents, so they can control whatever they create.
Yeah, so they're protecting somebody's patented right. So you have to be imitating a patent in order to be able to be violating their law.
So who owns the patent on marijuana?
Well, we don't know what marijuana is.
Nobody, because it doesn't
so,
exist.
But would they, I mean, if we went through the patent office, would they have filed some bogus thing so that they could act on
You can't patent you can't put an artificial entity on a natural thing. That's why the drug companies don't want you to use plant medicine, plant in the common sense.
Well, now because of Monsanto, they are starting to patent plants and living things, though.
Yeah, they can because those are artificially created.
Right.
But there was one case where, I'm sure it's going to be challenged again because to patent life that's one hell of a leap, patent life. You know, but that's what they're trying to do, and they're trying to make it look like it's legal, and it's actually not. It's illegal. They're doing it, but it's actually completely against every imaginable principle of law. You cannot patent life, but that's what they're trying to do. I mean, when you start patenting life, then you're acting like God.
Yeah. Well, that's their whole goal, and then they can use their eugenics on the rest of us.
Right, right. So then it says, and for manufacture, and there's that word and again, and possession. Okay, that means you have to have the end result, whatever the substance is in your hand, and possession of marijuana, whatever that happens to be, with the intent to distribute it, to enter it into the marketplace. So there's a lot of language just in that one little tiny sentence. So you can't even go past doing any additional research until you understand what the basic language is in the accusation that they're trying to give you and the purpose of the title from which the accusation originates. Does that make sense there, Senor?
It does.
Well, what should make the most sense is that you cannot simply read these statutes casually because they're minefields. They contain words that you have no idea what they mean. You think you know what they mean, and in another context, you're probably right about what they mean. But if you're in the District of Columbia and you're facing one of their statutes, you don't have a clue as to what these words mean.
Right. All right. So let's look at this other document that I sent you called Convention 1961. Okay, I kind of want to start from the outside and work our way in because I think it will make a little more sense if we begin with the big picture and then try to narrow it down.
And so, of course, we're going to go to the United Nations here because they often use the United Nations to subvert local laws and things like that.
Yeah, so most people have all these romantic views, of course, of the United States, the Constitution, and even the United Nations. The United Nations is just nothing more than a big you know, conglomerate of corporations. It's like a board of directors of the big corporations. That's all it is. And they're coming together to protect each other's farms. That's all. So if we look at it from that point of view, it's easy to understand.
And we're the product on those farms.
Well, we're the product producers. You know, we're the animals in the farm. You know.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And the farmers show up to this national, to this convention, and put in their two cents as far as, well, I think that we should control this. Yeah, but so you can't pass that law over there because then it makes it difficult for me to properly extort the animals on my farm. So, no, I don't quite agree with those human rights because, see, that's giving my animals on my farm too many rights. So we need to argue that a little bit more back and forth. And that's how the game works. You know, and this whole thing about drugs actually originates from the United Nations. So on page 2, you know, take a look at, you know, what I highlighted there, because even that
sure
doesn't make sense the way it's written.
You want to read that?
Well, right, what I highlighted here is the expression production of raw materials of narcotic drugs.
Sure.
Okay, now, production is also a term all by itself. Now, what they are not telling, I'm sure a lot of these people in the United Nations, they themselves don't even understand what that term means. But production of anything related to narcotics is, in fact, also a controlled substance. So you have to produce a controlled substance to make another controlled substance. Okay? But what they're trying to tell these people in these other countries is that, hey, just the fact that you're growing a poppy plant, that is, in fact, raw materials for narcotic drugs. And that's not true. But that's what they have right here in this language.
Well, and not only that, but many of the drugs are not narcotics, creating narcosis in the taker. You know, and so that's a whole other thing as well. You know, it's long been argued that marijuana is, to the imagination, a quote-unquote narcotic.
Yeah. And then if you skip down to page 3, you see that United States of America is a membership in here. So then brings up the next question. Okay, do they mean United States of America as it appears in the preamble, or are they talking about the United States of America that appears in the Articles of Confederation, or are they talking about simply the federal government, which is listed as United States? See, they don't tell you any of these things. And then if you scroll down a little bit more on the same page, you see that I highlighted World Health Organization. That's a very important organization. And they were present when this meeting took place, when they came up with this agreement. And the World Health Organization is actually the organization that tells the Attorney General what to put in and what to take out of the substance control list. And why would the World Health Organization tell the Attorney General to do such a thing? Well, because they're trying to control the world market of drugs. And if some drug that someone else is trying to make money on all of a sudden is being quote-unquote produced in another country and nobody's making money on it, well, they got to put a stop to it.
That's why they go after the drug lords.
Mm-hmm.
That's the competition.
Yeah, they don't want any competition. That's the whole purpose of all these regulations, is to control the competition so that only those who they want to make the money on you will make it. It has nothing to do with your health. It has nothing to do with anything else. You know, and then they use the word addicted within this thing. And there's a big difference between you being addicted and you being dependent. Can you elaborate on that, Tom?
You mean to a drug?
Yeah, like if you're talking about a drug, that you're addicted to the drug and you're dependent on the drug. Now, the way that I'm seeing the difference is they're two totally different legal terms. Addicted and dependent is basically the same thing. The difference is that if you're addicted to something, it's illegal. If you're dependent on it, that's okay. That's legal.
Well, it'd be like being dependent on, a diabetic being dependent on a certain drug to keep their blood sugar.
Yeah. So if a medical marijuana patient was dependent on marijuana to control their nausea, then they would be dependent, not addictive. So then it's not illegal. Right.
Correct. Yeah. Or someone could be, dependent on whatever, some really strong narcotic. Well, that's okay. And there's legal methods so that you will not be so dependent on it. But when you're addicted to it, that means that you're obtaining it illegally.
So addicted means, even if you're addicted to, let's say, a legal drug, if you get it illegally, that's what makes you actually addicted.
Yeah.
Illegally.
In the legal sense. Mumbo jumbo.
Yeah, because a lot of people are addicted to prescription medications.
Sure.
Medical personnel have a real drug problem because they have access to mind-altering drugs.
Well, isn't that why pharmacists become pharmacists?
Some of them may. I don't know if all of them do, but you can become physically addicted to things that are not legally addicted. It doesn't mean the same thing. Like most words, it has a different legal meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So an addict in psychological terms is also dependent.
I've never been addicted to something legally. How would you explain that?
Well, you just don't know what's going on.
So, I mean, you don't even actually have to be using something, but you could. But if you got it illegally, you're still addicted to it, essentially.
Well, I suppose a lawyer could make a case for that for sure.
You could be dependent on a particular prescription, and then the doctor quits giving it to you, and then you go on the street and buy it.
Yeah.
So you can exercise your addiction, please your addiction.
Yeah.
Then it's illegal, but as long as
if you're self-medicating, of course, they would just say, well, your doctor took that away because he didn't think you need it, even though it happens all the time that people have issues.
Yeah. I mean, I have a friend that's a cop, and he says, I deal with more people addicted to so-called legal drugs than illegal drugs.
Yeah.
And he's on a part of the police force that deals with illegal drugs. And he says, if I was to bring in all the people that are addicted to prescription drugs, he says you would not have enough jails.
Yeah. Yeah, I know people that are addicted to things like Percocet,
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're addicted in the psychological sense, if you're addicted, you're also dependent.
Mm-hmm.
But addicts, say, a diabetic isn't necessarily addicted to insulin, even though they're dependent on it.
Mm-hmm. Scroll down to 15 when you can.
Okay.
So if they decided to make insulin illegal, then they would be an addict.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's all in word. It's like slapping a different post-it note with a word on it to mean, this object is now something else.
Sure. Now, Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs, 1961, preamble, concerned with the health and welfare of mankind. Oh, well, thank you guys for your, for your appeal to authority there and for wanting to rule my life without my permission and, for looking out for me and my welfare.
Well,
recognizing that the medical use of narcotic drugs continues to be indispensable for the relief of pain and suffering, and that adequate provision must be made to ensure the availability of narcotic drugs for such purposes.
Isn't that nice? which brings up another point that actually Tom and I were researching earlier.
So first they say you can't have the narcotic drugs, and then they say you have to make sure that they're...
Because they're indispensable.
Yeah.
But you dispense drugs.
So,
I mean, the language gets silly. They're indispensable, but you dispense them.
Yeah, and actually that's another term that they use, is to dispense. When you dispense, you're dispensing a drug under a license. You cannot dispense a drug unless you're licensed. Only licensed people can dispense a drug.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they, you know, these people who write this stuff, you can see how complicated it is. They don't even keep track of the meaning of their own terms. And, you know, you can get them even on their own language, because their language is not always 100% correct, because sometimes the statutes get overturned. And they get overturned on a technicality of a misuse of a word. But again, most attorneys don't want to challenge the system to that degree. Okay, they just want to get you minimize punishment. So the other word that you see there that I highlight is understanding. You know, we've spoken about that word before, how important it is. So,
sure.
So they're telling you, you know, understanding that such universal actions call for international cooperation guided by the same principles and aimed at common objectives. So the people who are part of this thing are saying, yeah, we're going to stand under it.
And not only that, it's admitting that it's an international cartel.
Yes. Yes.
It's the, and what I mean, people are calling the One World Order or the New World Order.
Yeah, and when you read through this agreement, that's what you're going to come up with. You're going to say, darn, this seems like a cartel, that they're protecting their drug business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, the Queen of England was, of course, and that's where they got their money from, was one of the largest opium traders in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In the 19th century, Queen Victoria, that everybody thought was a saint.
Mm-hmm. So now let's look at some of these definitions there that I highlighted. Go ahead, Jan.
All right, so you already read understanding. Let's get into definition number one. Except where otherwise expressly indicated or where the context otherwise requires, the following definitions shall apply throughout the convention. Now, of course, they're taking it from the convention in 1961, where it was only to apply throughout the convention, and then they're applying it throughout the world from there, oddly. B, cannabis means the flowering or fruiting tops of the cannabis plant. Okay, well, that's odd. I mean, it's actually a whole plant. Cannabis plant means any plant of the genus cannabis, the cannabis from the cannabis plant. Drug means any of the substances in Schedules 1 and 2, whether natural or synthetic.
Okay, now pause there for a second. So in those definitions of cannabis, do you see the word drug or
no.
compound?
No, it says resins. Okay, gotcha. And then under K, General Assembly means the General Assembly of the United Nations. Okay, and then in I, illicit traffic means the cultivation or trafficking in drugs, not resins, etc., as it defines cannabis, contrary to the provisions of this convention. N, manufacture means all processes other than production by which drugs may be obtained, and includes refining as well as the transformation of drugs into other drugs. So that's not marijuana, that's for sure. Schedule 1, 2, and 3, and Schedule 4 mean the correspondingly numbered list of drugs or preparations annexed to this convention as amended from time to time in accordance with Article 3.
Okay, so let's pause there for a second. So again, making the reference back to cannabis, do you even see the word marijuana in the meaning of cannabis? No.
No.
The word drug in there? No. But yet they're talking about nothing but drugs.
Right. And so obviously none of this applies, and then they just slip a few little hazy things in there to pretend, and they go, so then we see number five, Secretary General means the Secretary General of the United Nations. So basically the United Nations has been dictating the drug laws, and then all of these puppet cops and everybody else follow along with it.
Yeah.
And then W, special stocks, means the amount of drugs held in a country or territory by the government of such country or territory for special government purposes. let's ignore Louis Jolyon West, who talks about the government supplying or holding back drugs for certain purposes. Mm-hmm. And to meet the exceptional circumstances and the expression of expression special purposes shall be construed accordingly. So they're going to construe it as they need.
Yes, got it. Yes. As they need, as the need arises.
And then why territory means any part of a state which is treated as a separate entity for the application of the system of import certificates and export authorizations provided for in Article 31.
Okay, pause there for a second.
You know, so I mean, but you know, the irony here is that none of us agreed to this United Nations diddly squat whatsoever. We have a bunch of corrupt politicians who did all of this stuff behind our backs, and then they use that to push. I mean, this whole thing is ridiculous. The definition shall not apply in the term territory as used in Articles 42 and 46. So they have exceptions there.
Yeah,
as well.
So they're telling you that a territory is something unique, something special. So then is it possible to have a territory over a certain area and have 10 other territories over the same area?
So, and then what they say is that number two here, that the definition of consumption doesn't mean that you actually took it. It means that when it has been supplied to any person or enterprise for retail distribution, mm-hmm. medical use, or scientific research. So if you didn't distribute it, if you didn't use it for medical use or scientific use, then where the hell are they coming up with any idea that marijuana is illegal?
Well, there you go. I mean,
or that you had an intent to distribute it.
Yeah, you can see that there's no connection at all.
Amazing.
You know, now go ahead and scroll down to page 44. This is the one that's really funny.
Page 44. Let's see. It looks like it has a few sections in here.
Mm-hmm. Just go all the way down to page 44. And I want you to look at the chemical composition.
Oh, look at this. Okay, so list of drugs included under Schedule 4. And it says cannabis and cannabis resin, and then you know, all of the other drugs on the left, and I'll have to put this all on the website for people to download and look at this. But on the left, they have all of the drugs, and then on the right, they have the chemical description.
Okay,
well,
okay, here's
for cannabis and cannabis resin, there is nothing on the right side.
Yeah, okay, but let me pause you there. The name on the left column is just the identifiable name. That's not the actual name of the drug. The actual name of the drug is on the right.
Which they also call, yeah, and so they don't put marijuana or anything on the right, which is another made-up name.
Yeah, but it has to have a chemical composition. There's the chemical composition on the right.
Well, boom, there goes that argument. Oh boy!
So if we begin and work our way down from the United Nations, we can see that the United Nations themselves cannot possibly call cannabis and cannabis resin a drug because it's not even listed as a drug.
Or marijuana because it doesn't even explain that one is the other and they're the same, etc.
That's right. The word marijuana doesn't even appear in there, you know, in connection with cannabis. So it's just mind-boggling when you begin to actually see the reality of this insanity.
Well, the thing that comes to my mind is that they're operating in accordance with reality. They're creating a reality, and they're not violating real reality. They're creating a reality, and they're operating in accordance with that reality.
It's a plurality.
Yeah.
It's a plurality, and then they draw everyone into their plurality.
Yeah, but I'm always impressed with how they really only try to screw you with what they create, and they carefully avoid stepping on the plants that are growing in your garden.
Right. Yeah. Because they cannot touch that which is in the real world. Whatever they control They have to create.
They have to create it. And so that goes back to the very simple point that whenever you deal with the government on whatever level, county, municipal, whatever, you have to know what the heck they're talking about. And you can truly say that you don't understand it.
Yeah.
And so you can't enter a plea. You can't defend yourself. You can't do anything until you understand what these words mean.
Yeah, I mean, if you say that you do, I mean, you're really making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
But anyway, then the next step would be, and the reason that this thing here came up is because this convention is actually mentioned in the statutes from the United States that deal with his accusations.
So they all refer back to each other, and then nobody goes back and checks the original documents, and then they all sit there, you know.
Yeah, they're citing each other mentally. They're citing each other as their authority, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, what?
Well, you know, you said and you said and you said, and I'm going to cite back to this thing, and even though this wasn't an official thing that anybody in the United States, the people voted for or anything else, we're all going to refer back to it and then use this whole lie to put 50, you know, or what is it, 50 or 70% of the people in jail for drugs are in there for nonviolent marijuana consumption. There we can see that it's not even illegal.
Yeah.
They can't control it. You can grow this stuff anywhere. That's the problem with cannabis. You can grow it just about anywhere. You can grow
it's
in
a weed.
Basement. Yeah.
Right.
It's a weed. That's what the Department of Agriculture has classed it on. If you go to their website, you'll find out that marijuana, it's a weed. It's not a drug.
It's like a dandelion.
You know, that's what they call it. So if marijuana is defined at all in the U.S. code, it's only defined in, I think that's Title VII, agriculture, that deals with weeds. It's a weed, and it can only be controlled where? On federally managed lands.
Yeah, that's right. You can't.
So don't grow your weed at the post office,
right.
Ladies
and don't
gentlemen.
Don't step on my dandelions, because dandelions have cancer-preventing qualities. I want them.
Yeah, and you know.
Don't you eat them in your salad all the time anyway?
Yeah, well, the whole plant is a very valuable medicinal plant.
Yeah.
It seems to me like it's hard to even buy salad mixes anymore that don't have dandelions in them. All right, so what about these other goodies? Or should we wrap it up and continue this research episode next week? We're already at an hour and a half.
Yeah, we should probably wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then we will continue a research episode next week. Is that what you two want to do?
Sounds good to me.
I'm away until the 4th of March. I'll be away.
All right, well, you're just going to have to miss it.
Yeah. Well, I won't be the one missing.
Right, so why don't we, what time are you going to be back on the 4th? Ladies and gentlemen, you can hear us schedule Tom's next participation.
Well,
on the
I won't
show.
Be back till it'll be like evening. I'll be back in the saddle on the 5th.
All right. Why don't we shoot for 11 a.m. on the 5th?
If you're up and about, it's good with me.
Okay.
All right. 11 a.m. on the 5th. Is that all right with you?
Sounds good, senor.
Ladies and gentlemen, these two will be back on the 5th, and we'll record it then and then get it out. And Bert, Tom, what are the most important concepts that you would like people to take away from this episode?
Yeah, you go first, Tom.
I would say the most important thing is to understand that you do not understand federal language, statutory language, and you have to say that, and you can't defend yourself in any possible way until you do understand saying to you. So that's the beginning of the research, that if you're charged with something or you're interested in a certain area because you have a relative who's charged with something, you have to do the heavy lifting and look at the definitions of those words and find out exactly what they mean. And you can't take or, and, if, or of for granted. They all have a purpose to serve in a statute.
Yeah. I mean, you have to approach it like it is a completely different language. I mean, if someone gave you a paper to sign that was written in Chinese, Arabic, or whatever, you would have to have an interpreter with you, and you would have to have a dictionary with you. And as we're going to find out as we go through this research, that not even an interpreter, which would be an attorney or a dictionary, is even going to get you halfway there.
Right.
There's still a whole half of it, which is court decisions that no attorney is ever going to sit down and say, okay, well, see, the problem we have here is that back in 1948, they had this case that redefined it here, and then that case was redefined again in 1962, and then again in 1992, and just recently, as last year. And you're like, what? But that's how it works.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So as far as anything related to controlled substances, please do whatever little homework you can in the meantime and research the word substance. That's what this whole thing is about. Anything related to the Controlled Substance Act comes down to the term substance and what it means. And that's what I want people to get out of this.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again in about a week
okay.
and a half.
Okay.
10-4.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Free Eddie, free Eddie, free Eddie. there.